The time now, 6:15, and rather unusually given that we're going to business now, we're not going to be talking about Greece or Europe. Simon Jack is here to talk about Facebook.
Yes, indeed.
Not unusual.
It's only 8 years old, but Facebook is a corporate phenomenon that has no equal. Its take-up has eclipsed that of any other software company. It's currently got nearly 1 billion users. No one disputes its success, but how much is it worth? Well, the price range and the number of shares available have both been increased, and we'll find out definitively today as the what price the public can buy shares. Now, most expect its price to imply a value of the company of around $100 billion. The success of this IPO, as it's known, has implications for the whole technology industry, as I found out when I visited the UK's biggest tech hub, a city intersection that has acquired the nickname of Silicon Roundabout.
It's not the prettiest place in the world, that's for sure. It looks nothing like Silicon Valley, but if you look closely, there are clues as to what goes on in this corner of London. A digital marketing company advertising itself on one side, and right in the middle, hung from enormous steel spars, an advert for a well-known tablet computer. And the folks around here will be watching closely at the merry-go-round, the holy grail for investors and employees alike in places like this, the blockbuster IPO of Facebook.
My name is Eileen Burbage, and I'm a partner at Passion Capital, which is an early-stage venture capital firm here in London. It's hugely important, but only because of its scale and its size. So I don't know that necessarily IPOs these days or listing on the public markets are the holy grail anymore, because there's lots of other options now for early-stage entrepreneurs and very small companies. But one of this scale is definitely going to be a bellwether for the whole industry and for software in general.
The $100 billion question is, how exactly do you go about valuing a business like Facebook? Who says it's worth so much? Jason Voss is from the Chartered Financial Analyst Institute, the world's biggest group of investment professionals.
Valuation is half analysis and half art, and because there are very few facts in Facebook's case, there are not too many metrics that you would look at. It sort of falls into that art realm, and there you're making evaluations of things like character and trying to assess opportunity, you know, lockstep with management and hoping that you're seeing the same things that they are in terms of opportunity.
Facebook didn't even exist several years ago. I just wonder whether investors have the appetite for this kind of risk.
Facebook is, you know, among the unique companies of the last 20 years. And it's funny, I was reading the Wall Street Journal the other day, and I written down this quote that I wanted to share. And they were referring to Facebook in reference to Google and Yahoo, and they said that Google and Yahoo are traditional sellers of display and search ads. Well, I remember a time not too long ago where display and search ads were considered radical and new, and nobody thought that that had a future.
Founder Mark Zuckerberg, who until recently handed out business cards which read, "I'm CEO, bitch," is about to reap untold wealth, more than all Walmart's 10,000 stores made last year, for example. But he has not softened his defiant style. On the Facebook roadshow, he visited several venerable New York financial institutions wearing his signature hoodie, which some took as a sign of immaturity. But for Tavit Hrinkus, who works in the same tech hub building as Eileen Burbage, he's following impressive footsteps and should stick to his guns.
I think Mark Zuckerberg is continuing along the lines of where Sergey Brin and Larry Page started with Google. I mean, they set up a similar structure in Google already, and I think they've been implementing a similar plan. As Sergey and Larry hired Eric Schmidt to be their business face, similarly Zuckerberg has hired Sheryl to be his business face of the company. So I think it's good for him to stay true to the roots and do what he's doing best and hire other people to help out in other areas where he's not the best one.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think that it's a different kind of person who starts a business like Facebook or like Google, as Tavit mentioned, and a very different type of person who then runs a publicly traded company. I think what's interesting is, obviously, because he has so much control, the investors will want to have access to him and feel that they understand him or develop an understanding of his sort of psyche. But then I think it's equally important to himself to sort of stay true to what his personality is, because that is where the value lies.
So far, it's working. In the past week, both the price range for the shares and the number of shares on offer have both been raised in face of strong demand. Unique the company may be, but that means no one's done it before, and the challenge of justifying that bumper price tag will not be easy. Jason Voss again.
that's one of my concerns about Facebook, is possible backlash. And from two sides, honestly, I think they've got kind of a high wire act that they're going to have to negotiate. One of them is this privacy issue, which is how invasive to go to sell, you know, hyper-targeted ads to our users. But then on the other side, they face a backlash potentially from advertisers if they don't get that right. And here's the thing, they may not be able to find the magic formula. They may, in fact, offend simultaneously their users and their advertisers if they don't manage things well.
That was Jason Voss finishing that article on Facebook. One other concern that some people have is that some of the big original shareholders are selling much bigger stakes than originally thought. Goldman Sachs, for example, is going to sell 29 million shares. That was more than double the 13 million it was going to sell. Peter Thiel, the legendary Silicon Valley investor, one of the firm's big backers, is investment director at Scottish Widows. He's in our Edinburgh studio. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
When clever people with lots of shares decide to head for the door, is that a worry for people who might be buying in?
It would certainly worry me, but maybe that's my lack of vision about Facebook. Just to put it in context, the size of this company will be about the same size as our Vodafone, but Vodafone is 14 times more profitable. And also, just interestingly, the founders are selling 20% of the business, but they're keeping virtually 100% of the votes. So beware poor governance. One day it will bite you. So I think caveat emptor in this one.
Well, you say he's retaining about 55% of the voting shares, even though he's going to have much less of that. Sort of the Murdoch model, if you like, and investors don't generally like that.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg is keeping over 50% of the votes, and the founding team are keeping 96% of the votes. They obviously feel that the new shareholders aren't clever enough or visionary enough to have any say in how the business develops and goes forwards. And maybe he's right, but if it goes wrong, you can't get out of it.
OK, your views on that are pretty clear there. The markets yesterday, pretty volatile day. Dow Jones was down 33 at 12,598. FTSE was down 32. Tokyo, the Nikkei's up a little bit. Obviously, we can't get away from Greece. The equity markets haven't had that big 5, 6, 7, up to 10% day that some of the Armageddon talk that's around might expect.
Well, it is all focused on Greece, but I suppose when you look at the FTSE 100, the 100 biggest companies in the UK, two-thirds of the profits from that market come from out with the UK and significant proportions in Asia and the US. So there's more than just Europe, and markets have held up reasonably well. Our bond markets have done very well, and surprisingly, our currency has done well too.
And Mervyn King yesterday was talking about inflation not falling back as fast as he had previously thought. The bank's record on inflation prediction is really pretty ropey, isn't it?
Yes, they've been underestimating inflation for some time. The hope now will be they're overestimating inflation, because we are seeing energy prices come back and some other commodity elements coming back. So I think some in the market would expect inflation to fall further than perhaps Mervyn King is expecting. But at the end of the day, it was a pretty gloomy outlook from Mervyn King yesterday, perhaps not surprisingly.
OK, Richard Dunbar, Investment Director at Scottish Widows. Many thanks for that. Now, sticking with investment community. The UK's investment management industry looks after £3.9 trillion worth of financial products. Its trade body is the Investment Management Association, which accounts for about 90% of those people involved. Richard Saunders helped set up the association 11 years ago. He's just announced that this year will be his last at the helm. Good morning to you, Richard Saunders.
Morning, Simon.
Now, you are leaving just as it's getting excited. The shareholders are revolting. People's pay deals are being voted down. What do you make of this recent phenomenon that some people are calling the shareholder spring?
I think we're seeing quite a few things coming together at the same time. There's been a lot of... I think when we look at the individual companies concerned, there are different stories.
AstraZeneca,
to each one.
Trinity, yeah, Mira, yeah, and Aviva. Yeah.
Yeah, they're different stories in each, but the common thread to each is that there have been concerns amongst the shareholders about performance, about communication. And I think that what we'll see as a result of this is that a lot of companies will take this to heart. They'll be asking the question, can we change the way we communicate with shareholders? Can we talk to them earlier?
That's interesting. You say change the way they communicate, not pay their bosses less.
Well, I think what they pay the bosses and what the structure of that pay is one of the things that they're going to need to talk about, because that's one of the concerns. It's partly that it's too complicated, partly there have been too many rewards for failure. And that's that is something that investors are looking for, and I would expect that companies and their remuneration committees will start to respond to that.
Okay, faith in the system in the last 5 years particularly has been rocked by the financial crisis. And I just learned, being a shareholder has been no fun since 2007. In fact, you haven't made any money at all. Do you think that out there people have still got any faith in the savings and investment system?
Well, I think it goes back even further than that. I mean, it's not been a lot of fun being a shareholder since the late 1990s with the dot-com crash as well, 10 years ago.
Almost since you took over.
Absolutely. There's pure coincidence, of course. But what's been interesting, I think, is that while there's undoubtedly been problems with trust in the financial system generally, it has not stopped people saving. And I think there's a well-attested phenomenon that that people will respond to uncertainty, to crisis, by saving more. And we've seen that in our retail funds numbers. The 2009 and 2010 were record years.
And the small investor, in fact, holding funds directly is actually overtaking the pension funds.
That's right. In the last 10 years, the size of the retail funds industry has doubled and is rapidly catching up with the pension funds as owners of the UK stock market, and will overtake them shortly.
When people do invest, the financial industry hasn't always covered itself in glory when it comes to fees. For example, front-end loads can be up to 5%, management fees 1.5%, dealing fees, custodial fees, fees on fees and fees. So that basically your average Joe Public needs to make about 7% in his first year just to break even. That's not fair.
I think the numbers are wrong there.
There's a number of different, we
can agree to disagree on that, but I've got numbers which I think can challenge that. There's a number of points to make. First, when it comes to initial fees, they're largely to pay for commissions, for distribution, and that's going to disappear next year with the advent of the Retail Distribution Review, and I think that's a good thing. Secondly, on the hidden charges, it's a very emotive term, but actually, when you look at the net returns that investors get, there's no sign of any hidden charges.
Okay, Richard Saunders, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Simon. 27 minutes past six. Gary's here with all the sport. Cricket.
Indeed, and if you're going to Lord's today for the first test of the summer between England and the West Indies, the weather forecast is reasonably encouraging. While it's likely to be a cloudy day, play should start on time this morning with a small chance of showers at some point later this afternoon, and we'll have a detailed preview of the test at 8:25 this morning. Also today, Liverpool will start their search for a new manager after sacking Kenny Dalglish. There's a long list of candidates being mentioned to take over, but our chief correspondent Mike Ingham says the club's American owners must now make critical decisions for the future of the club.
I think Liverpool have to look at themselves, I think, and especially the Americans. I think they've dug themselves into a hole because of their inertia over the new stadium. We've got these financial fair play rules kicking in soon, and Liverpool are going to be at a major disadvantage. They're trying to compete with the United, Manchester United, Arsenal stadiums. So that's why they need Champions League involvement more than anything else, not Europa League. That's not what the Fenway Sports Group are in it for.
Rangers have had their appeal against a 12-month transfer embargo and a £160,000 fine rejected. The club were charged last month by the Scottish Football Association over a breach of six rules. Crewe have reached the League Two playoff final after defeating Southend 3-2 on aggregate. Last night's match finished 2-2. On to racing. It's the second day of the May meeting at York. The Dante Stakes at 2:30 will be a pointer for next month's Derby at Epsom, with great interest in Bonfire. Here's our correspondent Cornelius Lysert.
Bonfire, who recorded a success and a luckless third place in two races as a two-year-old last year, has long been highly regarded by trainer Andrew Balding and his team. Having missed what might have been an easier task at Chester last week because of very soft going, the colt, currently second favourite for the Epsom Derby behind Camelot, will be strongly tested today in a very good running of an often very informative trial for the June the 2nd Classic. Irish colt Ernest Hemingway, Fencing and Mandayan are all looking to enhance their undoubted Derby credentials as well.
So our selections for York at 2:30, it is number one, Bonfire. Earlier at 2:00, try number 10, Set to Music.
Gary, thanks very much. Now then, a taste of something pretty dramatic coming up over on Radio 4 Extra this weekend.
Even if you can't hear danger,
I hear with my eyes. That is my curse.
You can still see it.
Can I forget what I know? Can I live with it?
And then it could be too late.
Oh, God, what's...
Boss?
How much do you know, Inspector?
I can't hear you.
There's no option. You had to kill him.
I can't hear you at all.
Inspector Morse returns to BBC Radio 4 Extra in the silent world of Nicholas Quinn.
What's the matter, Inspector?
He's been murdered.
Sunday afternoon at 1:30.
Ah, delicious. It's 6:30. You're listening to Today on BBC Radio 4 with Sarah Montague and James Naughtie here. Let's have a summary of the news from Charles Cowell.
The American carmaker General Motors is expected to announce this morning that it will continue making Vauxhalls at Ellesmere Port in Cheshire, securing more than 2,000 jobs at the plant and creating hundreds more. There had been concerns that the factory would close, but the company plans to build the next generation of Astra there. The Prime Minister will claim today that Britain is well on its way to dealing with the debt crisis and that the economy is moving in the right direction. In a speech to business leaders, David Cameron will defend the government's policies for cutting the deficit and argue that Labour's calls for increased spending to stimulate growth are dangerous. Mr. Cameron will also repeat his message that the Eurozone must choose whether to support its weakest members or accept that they have to leave. Last night, the head of the International